I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Seeing that I have authors on this program frequently and have a particular fondness for featuring books on local Vancouver and British Columbia figures, one invariably follows the trades, like the indispensable BC Book World and Quill Inquirer. I read about my next guest's book now some time ago. Claudia Cornwall has written a new book, At the World's Edge, Kurt Lang's Vancouver, 1937 to 1998. I didn't know who Kurt Lang was, but the black and white shot of Vancouver in neon intrigued me. The Gary Busey-looking guy on the cover with a cigarette in his hand was apparently Kurt Lang. I've been reading Claudia's book, and it's just a fascinating read about Lang, who is a fascinating and remarkable figure on his own. He was a poet, an artist, as well as a photographer. He fished. He did work in software. The book captures a Vancouver from a bygone era, and it also shows how we've evolved to quote another book, from Milltown to Metropolis. We'll ask Ms. Cornwall about Kurt Lang, who he was, what he did, how she knew him, and more. The book is published by Mother Tongue Publishing. Claudia Cornwall is a freelance writer who's won many prizes, including the Hubert Evans Nonfiction Prize in 1996, for her book, Letter from Vienna, A Daughter Uncovers Her Family's Jewish Past. Her own website is at ClaudiaCornwall.com. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program in North Vancouver, Claudia Cornwall. Good morning, Ms. Cornwall.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, well, thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. So how did you know Kurt Lang?
I met him through my husband. This was in Kurt's, as you mentioned, he was, one of the things he did was software, and he was a software entrepreneur. He had a company called Western Softworks, advertised for a programmer, and my husband answered the ad, got the job, and then we became friends with Kurt. We would have dinner together, and I soon realized he was not your average entrepreneur or average businessman at all.
So you had no idea of his past, right?
Oh, no, not, you know, certainly not, you know, I guess, you know, had no idea, although my husband has kind of glimpses that, you know, this was a different kind of guy, because when he went for the job interview, they ended up talking about, you know, Logic and Alfred Tarski and Benjamin Whorf, who did work on linguistics, and this is certainly an unusual kind of interview for a programming job.
Yeah,
so
now,
he had hints, you know, and then these hints developed into more.
Now, so to, when was this? This was in the
80s? This would be 1986.
Yeah. So up to 86, was he well known? Like if we went to the art scene here in Vancouver, 80s, 70s, and 80s, would we have known who he was? Or?
He was known in certain circles. I mean, there was a beatnik, you know, circles. Many people would have known him. I mean, the people who hung out in the Alcazar, you know, Alcazar Hotel, which was the local watering hole for beatniks and artists and others, would certainly have known him. He knew a lot of people because he moved in a lot of different circles. He was curious about a lot of different things. So he wasn't, I don't know, I mean, he certainly wasn't, nobody wrote about him. I mean, you wouldn't find a newspaper article about him. But people kind of in that group certainly knew who he was. He wasn't a, you know, I don't know, like a wallflower or some timid person hanging off in the corners that nobody ever heard of.
So he was born in Vancouver, right?
He was born in Vancouver and definitely a real Vancouver person. He, when he was about, I guess he was in, he was about 7 or 8, he moved into the Vancouver Hotel, which was turned into a hostel, just after the Second World War. His father was a vet, and this was a hostel for vets, so he lived downtown for a while, and his first bike he got when he was living there, and he rode around the, you know, back alleys and whatnot of downtown Vancouver. So he really became very familiar with it and was, you know, very, I would, you know, it's hard to imagine a person like him, you know, coming out of Paris or New York. I mean, he was a Vancouver type.
Yeah, and he lived all over the place, right? Because you have the addresses of where he...
Yes, he lived a lot downtown, different places downtown. He lived sort of on Pender Street near the park. He lived on Dunbar near the university. In the latter part of his life, he lived in North Vancouver.
He grew up, though, on Dieppe. That's out east, right?
Right, Dieppe Drive. It was veterans' housing. So just after the war, so he had, all his friends were the children of vets. Mostly their fathers were vets, but I guess there were some maybe where the mothers were vets. But this was veterans housing, and it sort of gave a different kind of cast, I think, to their life. I mean, one of the things about that era, I mean, in 1959, Kurt wrote in his diary, "I am going to be interviewed as a beat in the Black Spot Cafe." And so this was kind of the start of the beatnik era, but it was only like 14 years after the Second World War. And I think these people were really shaped by that. I mean, they grew up in the shadow of the Second World War. Because Kurt, when he was, his father left when he was like two or three and went overseas and never came back until, you know, for 5 years or something. So he was gone along a lot of the time. And the fathers in this neighborhood that you mentioned, Renfrew Heights, many of them had gone through, you know, had a bad war, and a lot of them, I think, had, you know, we call it post-traumatic stress syndrome, but of course in those days, they never heard of that, and you were a man, you were supposed to just, you know, swallow it and carry on kind of thing, and a lot of them found their therapy in alcohol. I mean, there's a lot of alcoholism, and some of the fathers, and Kurt's father among them, were kind of emotionally unavailable. I mean, they'd been away for a long time, and they came back, and they were still kind of unavailable. And I think that had an influence on these fellows.
Growing up, did he know what he wanted to do with his life?
No, I don't. Well, he always changed. I mean, he started out, he wanted to be, he was interested in poetry. He wrote poetry. He published it. He published his first poem in Canadian Poetry Magazine when he was 15. He hung out with Al Purdy and Malcolm Lowry, lived for a while in Montreal where he hung out with Irving Layton. So that was his interest. Then he got more interested in painting, and he painted with Fred Douglas. He had a studio down on Pender Street near the park and exhibited some of his paintings in the Vancouver Art Gallery and also the New Design Gallery. Then he decided he'd be a bookseller, and he started the bookstore, which eventually became McLeod's Books and still exists.
Yeah.
So he's a person who, you know, kind of decided to do different things. Sometimes he just had an idea. He wanted to do something new. Sometimes circumstances forced him into something new. He was a fisherman in 1980, and, you know, interest rates went sky high, and he could no longer afford to fish. I mean, he couldn't pay the debt on his boat, and, you know, couldn't pay the interest anymore, and so he had to come ashore. So sometimes it was circumstances, sometimes it was himself deciding, I want to do something new.
How do you, as a writer, go back to what happened in the 60s and reconstruct the life that way?
Well, it was an interesting process, because there are not very many secondary sources here. Like, there's no newspaper articles, there are not very many books about this period of Vancouver's past. I mean, there are more books, you know, San Francisco's beat scene is quite famous, but our beat scene is not. It's just, you know, I feel like it's kind of like breaking new ground to investigate this. And, you know, so you go back to people who were there, and so people have recollections. And I was fortunate. I mean, I did the research for this over a period of 10 years. I started in 1998, put it aside for a while, and then resumed it when Mother Tongue was interested in publishing the book. So it's good that I did the interviews in 1998, because some of those people are gone. I mean, Don McLeod, who started McLeod's Books, is gone, and Kurt's friend Fred Douglas is gone. So many of these figures, these beat figures, are gone. But, you know, so personal interviews is an important thing. And then Kurt did leave, he had diaries and also letters. There's a big correspondence between him and Al Purdy, and so that was a good source. And, you know, there were some paintings, sketches, photographs. He kind of reconstructed through that, but there's not very much, you know, in the way like newspaper articles or any kind of other sources. It's all, you know, people's memories and maybe what you might find in notebooks, that kind of thing. It's not, so you're really breaking new ground. There aren't references and things that you can look up.
Yeah, there's a story, I can't remember where I read or I heard the story, you saying that you went to the library looking for stuff, and then they said, there's this book coming out this fall.
That's right, they said, this book about Kurt Lang might help you, and I said, oh, book about Kurt Lang, eh? Is it called At the World's Edge? They said, yeah, that's it. I said, oh, it's my book, so it can't help.
Yeah.
So there isn't much.
So the family, you obviously talked to the family. Who's left?
Well, in the early stage, I did talk to his mom. He has cousins that I talked to. So those were, you know, and I talked to an aunt of his. So, yeah, there were some family members that I could talk to, which was great. And, you know, and there was actually some historical record of his grandfather, who was kind of a wild newspaper man in the prairies and got into all kinds of crazy scrapes and started many, many newspapers on the prairies. I mean, starting in Saskatchewan and then just moving across the prairies and into Alberta and down into Fort McLeod. And there was actually, I found, you know, people, his grandfather got in trouble with the police, ended up in jail, and there's a play about this. And so I found that. So that was one place where I actually did find some written material about one of the characters. So that was helpful.
Was there a wife and kids for Kurt?
No kids. Two wives, and the one wife I knew because his second wife, when I got to know Kurt, his second wife, Ruth, was there, and so I could talk to her. I mean, I knew her already. His first wife I didn't know, and I actually had a bit of trouble tracking her down because, I didn't know what name she would go under. Would she be Lang? Was it her maiden name? And people told me all kinds of different things about where she might be. Some people thought she was in London. Some people thought she was here, Sunshine Coast, you know. So it took me a while to find her, but eventually I did. So, yeah, I talked to her, but there were no children from either of the marriages. There's also, of course, Kurt's brother, who was a great source of inspiration. He lives in Victoria, and he's been very supportive of this whole project. He lent me, Kurt's diary and the letters and photographs and was always, you know, helpful, giving me comments and helping me to understand what was going on.
So you talked to the various people who knew him at various stages of his life. The sort of picture that we get of Kurt, I mean, there were contradictions, weren't there?
There were. I mean, and some people told me one thing and some people told me something else. I mean, some people said, oh, he was a real ladies' man. Other people said, oh, he hated women, you know. So, yeah, there were lots of contradictions. He showed himself to be different to different people, I think, and as I talk to different people, yeah, it's hard to sometimes reconcile, and sometimes it's, you know, I think when he was younger, he was wilder, he was, he did all kinds of crazy things, whereas when I knew him, he was, after all, a businessman, even though he was an unusual businessman, but he did have to meet a payroll and pay the rent and that sort of thing. So that, of course, has a kind of sobering effect. And he was not quite as wild as in his youth. So my experience of him is a little bit different from what the experience that some of his friends had.
So you said you started the book in 98. He died in 98.
Yes.
Was he still alive when you thought of doing this?
Well, he was. I actually thought of doing it when he was alive and thought of doing a book about him and asked him about that. And he said, I'm not dead yet. So he was not, it's kind of put me off, like he didn't really want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of left it. And, of course, he died. I mean, I might have, I guess, raised it again with him, but he died very suddenly. You know, he was 61, and he had been quite vigorous up until then, so I didn't, I thought, well, maybe I can raise this again with him. So by the time when he died, then I thought, well, this objection or caution or whatever that he had or reluctance about this, well, now he's dead, so I don't have to worry about that.
Did you get a garlic peeler before he died?
I did get a garlic peeler. That was his present to a number of his friends, yep.
Yeah, do you still have it?
I still have it, yeah.
The back to the what it was like in this town in the 50s and 60s, I'm just under 30, so I don't obviously, I mean, it wasn't around.
Mm.
There aren't no time machines yet. This book is a wonderful view onto what it was like then.
Right, right.
Yeah, it was quite vibrant, wasn't it?
It was vibrant, and things were different. I mean, one of the things was, I mean, Vancouver had such a rich, like the resource industries were like lumbering, fishing, various kinds of boat activities, were quite strong, and especially when Kurt was a beatnik, I mean, people could go off in the summer, and he did this. He went off fishing, earned $800 over in a month, working like hell. I mean, working really hard, but it was a month. And then he had the whole winter off, and he could, you know, read and write and, you know, be a man of leisure. This is not possible now. Those industries are gone, but it kind of, they didn't have a lot of grants and things for art, and mm-hmm. so you had to support, you know, but this was their way of subsidizing their artistic inclinations. They could, you know, use the resource industries, and also rents were so cheap. I mean, he paid, you know, down $60 a month, you know, you could rent a house probably, and everybody pitches in a bit, so... I mean, expenses were low, so it kind of permitted this kind of experimentation. I get the impression, you know, that young people now have to be more serious. They can't be so, you know, all free and, you know, I'll do a bit of painting, I'll do a little art, I'll do a little, you know, photography or poetry. They can't experiment the same way.
Yeah, there was a scene in the book where he... they were living on West Pender there, I guess 1476 West Pender, I think, mm-hmm. was the address. And they were having trouble meeting rent some months.
Right.
And they would just tell the landlord to pay us, you know. And the landlord would tell them, just pay us when you have the money.
Right, yeah. I mean, inconceivable now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so there was a lot of this, you know, it kind of, you know, it permitted this kind of experimentation and, you know, gave people a chance to write and explore some of these other aspects of life.
Now, in the back of the book, you have a section of photographs that Kurt took.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all from this year, 1972, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, did he only take pictures at that time?
Yeah, he got this... well, in that case, he did get a grant. He and Fred Douglas got a grant to permit 7 photographers to take photographs of Vancouver. So he was one of the photographers, and he did it for perhaps a year, a little bit over a year. And of the 7 who were in the group, he was the most enthusiastic and took the most pictures and probably took the whole thing the most serious. It was most serious about it. And so there are 12,000 of his images in the Vancouver Vancouver Library in special collections. Some of them are available online. If you Google, you know, if you look into the Vancouver Public Library website, you can find them. The majority are not. I mean, the vast majority are not. And they're working on trying to make these things more available. I mean, they've had the images for 40 years, but they're just getting around to making it available for people to look at.
So these haven't been published anywhere else, right?
No, they have not.
Yeah. If you look at them, and they're of a Vancouver from, you know, from before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
It looks at once familiar,
mm-hmm.
as it does different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a kind of weird sort of nostalgia about it. I mean, there's one, like the corner of Gore Avenue and Pender Street. I'm just looking at that here in my copy of the book. And that Zhonghua Company is still there. It's interesting.
Exactly.
I mean, Chinatown hasn't changed so much.
No.
But some things, of course, you know, you wouldn't, you know, be able to find those particular views or those particular buildings anymore. But, you know, some things are still there. There's, so it's kind of an interesting mix. But, and certainly the prices are kind of interesting, you know, the food, like, you know, $1.75 for, you know, prawns and burgers, 60 cents, you know. That's always kind of entertaining.
Yeah, there's a corner of Hastings and Gore.
Yes.
And there was a Safeway there?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So some, and then the cars, they're kind of kind of interesting to look at the those old cars. And there's that, some of the things, I mean, that Manhattan building on Thurlow Street is there and looks pretty well the same. It's a little bit neater and tidier now, but
The one on Quebec.
Yes,
first. Did you have fun doing this? It sounds you did.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. I mean, the people, Kurt's friends, were pretty entertaining a lot, and they enjoyed talking about him. So that was fun, and it's just fun to, you know, kind of explore our own history. Which, I mean, Vancouver is this always looking to the future. I think, like Kurt himself. I mean, he was always on to the next thing. So, but we don't look back much, And so I thought this was interesting. And this period is particularly one that people haven't looked too much at. In the, you know, they've looked maybe further back, you know, the start of Vancouver, whatever. Mm-hmm. But this Beatnik era is a little bit, you know, hasn't been explored much.
And then when you take the arc of Kurt's life,
mm-hmm.
you see how Vancouver's evolved, you know, itself, right?
Yes, yes, you certainly do. And, I mean, that was one of the things, too. I mean, I found out about things that I wouldn't have found out about otherwise, like his friend Peter Oxier, who blew up a building at UBC. And, I mean, all and none of that I would have known had I not been exploring this path.
So when you knew him through your husband,
mm-hmm.
and your husband worked with him, did you know about, did you see the poetry, did you see the sketches, did you see the photographs?
The photographs I had seen, he had shown us the photographs. I don't think I had seen much in the way of poetry, although I knew that he wrote poetry, because he still wrote poetry, even when he was an entrepreneur. He occasionally would write poetry and send us an email, you know, he'd written this poem. So I knew a little bit about it. Of course, once I started to do the research, I found out more. I found more paintings, more sketches, more than I had seen. He had talked about his past lives, as it were, so, you know, but maybe not in as much depth. I certainly hadn't read the, you know, correspondence between Kurt and Al Purdy. And, in fact, I found the Kurt's letters to Al are in the University of Saskatchewan Special Collections, which is where I found them. So I hadn't read that. So there were parts that I knew, and then more that I discovered as I did this.
And there was a poem that Purdy wrote on Kurt's death, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So Al, even though, I mean, they weren't really so close in the latter part of both of their lives, but he was obviously still thinking about Kurt.
Yeah. This is such a great book. Congratulations on it, Claudia.
Oh, thanks for your interest.
And continued good luck with it.
Good. Okay, thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. The book is called At the World's Edge, Kurt Lang's Vancouver, 1937 to 1998. It's published by Mother Tongue Publishing. Its author, Claudia Cornwall, on the line from North Van. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plunter.